Good morning, my friends. Skip here. March 26th, 5:35 a.m. Got a morning schedule finally worked out. However, tomorrow is my last day in my current job assignment, so I'm not sure how that'll affect my morning schedule and my podcasting schedule, but we'll keep at it. I get up at 4:30. I have a little caffeine. I usually give a podcast about 5:30 to 5:45. Then I get ready for work. I'm at work about 7:15. Going to work about 7:30. So just the way I function best. You know, if you would have told me when I was younger that I needed to keep tight schedules, I probably would have laughed. I didn't think I was ever that person, but you discover many things old when you become older, and one of them is a little self-discipline and a little detail orientation go a long way. So here we are, giving our March 26th Tuesday podcast, and I hope all things are well with you. This is part two of a three-part series on God and barriers. It may sound strange, but as you listen, hopefully it becomes clear what I'm trying to convey. So as I said in the first part of this series, when I say the word God, instantly that perceptive mechanism kicks in. Instantly, everything we've been taught about who and what God is or was or isn't kicks in. And I don't care what religion you are. I don't care if you're an atheist. That word has connotations to everyone. And it means something, both negative and positive, to everyone. And because the word God carries so much baggage, in itself, it can be a barrier. Because with it comes all this other stuff. Rarely can a human being just say, "Yeah, there may be a God," or "I think there is a God," or "I think there isn't a God," without all sorts of sociological and moral and religious and political stuff that comes with just those simple statements. So I think where I want to pick up here is really something that I never thought I would do, but I've done it, and it's quite freeing to me. And listen, if you believe in a superior being, that's awesome. As I said in my first podcast, my first series, the first part of the series, you know, I'm inclined to believe there is some superior intelligence going on, but I've kind of rejected the idea of a completely personal God. I certainly have rejected in my spiritual journey the idea of, you know, sort of the grandfatherly old guy who lives in the clouds kind of stuff that we're all taught. Believe it or not, I think one of the things that introduced me to thinking about a transcendent being in a different way was the movie Star Wars. You know, I'm a child of the 70s. I don't remember seeing the first Star Wars in the theater, although we may have. I remember vividly going to see the second one. And then, of course, the third one. And, you know, and that idea of the Force, that idea that there's some sort of personal yet non-personal energy. And that's kind of where I just leave it. I don't need there to be a God on my side. I don't have a need anymore for that in my spiritual journey. And that's been quite freeing for me, because when I don't have to have those ideas, I don't have to have the baggage that I acquired over the years through my grandmother, my mother, my family, certainly the religious training I have. So, you know, one of the main barriers, I think, to my spiritual journey, and again, I'm speaking from my perspective, is these notions that we seem to insist on being a part of the spiritual journey, these theological concepts, I don't have to have them. There may very well may be a superior intelligence at work that I do not understand any more than the dog on my lap would understand how to do math. You know what I'm saying? or the bugs on the sidewalk, they don't understand human psychology. It's probably beyond anything I can conceive of. If there is indeed, and there probably is some, at least for me, superior idea of love and intelligence in the world, in the universe. So that's not my concern in my spiritual growth. And when that barrier fell away, spirituality opened up for me. So those connotations, those concepts of God, can in themselves be a barrier. And I'm going to make a bold statement. Rarely are they not a barrier. Because those ideas of God are formed in a dualistic notion. So that's the first thing I want to talk about. Now, what comes with that, right? Because we have to quantify, qualify, we have to institutionalize God. With those ideas of God come rules, regulations, dogmas, organizations, institutions. There's a great story in the Bible about the transfiguration of Jesus. Jesus takes two of his followers up to a mountain, and he transforms into a being of light, basically. And one of the followers wants to build buildings, wants to organize, wants to, my joke was always, you know, wants to form a committee. And if I remember the story, I think it was Peter. And so that's what we do, right? We have this transcendent experience. And the first thing we want to do is organize some sort of institutional way to understand it. And with those institutions comes, you know, oaths of obedience, ways of believing, creeds, dogmas, all the stuff that we humans have to pile on because we can't make sense of the transcendent from the perspective of the false reality. I did this too, friends. I mean, I'm not accusing. I had profound spiritual experiences very early in my spiritual journey, and I automatically equated them to church, to organized religion. Obviously, I mean, I worked in an organized religion for 20 years. What I've come to find out is that not only is the concept of God not necessary for spirituality, but the institutions we base in those concepts and the rules, the dogmas, and the morals that we base are also false. They're also a construct of human sociological and familial conditioning. Now, you know, like I said in my prior podcast, the Ten Commandments, pretty solid stuff, right? Don't take your neighbor's stuff. Don't kill your neighbor. Got it. The golden rule, do unto others. You know, when Jesus asked what the most important rule, law was, he says love. He will say love of God, love of neighbor, love of self. So, you know, that God part is tough because we can't know completely, but certainly the love part is there. So, we have these sort of simplified versions of what it means to coexist, right? Don't try not to do intentional harm. And if you do unintentional harm, try to understand it and make amends. Pretty easy. But I'm going to tell you, folks, there are huge volumes of not only just like religious books like the Bible or the Quran or what have you, the Torah, but there are huge volumes of addendums, of rules that humans have come up with, of books of disciplines that one must follow that we humans just keep piling on. And quite often what they do is their intention is, let me put it that way, is to take the human notions, the humanness, if you will, out of humanity. So we put these morals that may have been good or not 2,000, 4,000 years ago, and we try to put them on modern life. We try to use these holy, you know, supposed holy books and their addendum and their extra, you know, commentaries and their dogmas, ideas, disciplines, and rules to try to govern and rope in what it means to be human. And in doing so, we repress the very thing that we're searching for. We repress the very authenticity that we desire. And often we dismiss and ignore the transcendent loving experiences that bring us to ourselves. I remember being in a conversation years ago where I was talking about, you know, sort of the mystics having these experiences. And there was a guy in the conversation who was like, oh my gosh, no, that's not about God. You know, we don't believe that in our church. We only believe that Jesus is the way, and everyone who doesn't believe that's going to hell, basically. And I thought, God, what a shame that you ignore what these mystics are trying to say. I remember, my friends, in my ordination interview many years ago, the group of people being concerned that I was reading Meister Eckhart, ancient medieval mystic who had pretty radical notions of what it means to be human. And I left that interview going, but that was really weird that they would have concern that you're reading about someone experiencing God directly. Well, what I've come to find out, what I've come to understand, is that when you read these people, when you listen to what they say, these mystics, these, you know, transcendent people, these people who have had transcendent experiences, that threatens these institutions. It threatens the rules around the institutions. It threatens people's personal perception of God and their own morality and their own belief system. And I remember sitting in a meeting, one of these big annual meetings we used to have. They still have them. I don't. Thank goodness. And people arguing about homosexuality. You know, this is mid late 2000s. And I'm going, what are we doing? What is this? You know, let people love who they want to love. If you're not harming anyone, what's the problem? Well, the problem is that the idea of living who you truly are is a threat to the institutional perceptions that we have established about what it means to be human. And often at the center of those perceptions are concepts about who God is. And that's what we do. We tell people they have to act certain ways. They have to believe in certain things. They have to adhere to certain rules in order to be saved or to be enlightened or to be righteous with God. Often talking about that person's own perception of God. And so all of these things create barriers to who we are. All the while we're thinking we're being freed, right? The real tragedy of this, forgive me if I get a little emphatic here, the real tragedy of this whole thing, and I'm using the word tragedy very specifically, is that the things that we propose that free us, these beliefs, these institutions, these religious notions, are actually barriers. And that's just a shame. I don't know how else to put it. It's just a shame. Because people end up still wondering who they are after being faithful to religious concepts or political concepts or scientific concepts or philosophical concepts their whole life, because they were told that's the way it is, right? And the same is true on the other side. I met people who not only had certain definite ideas about who God was, I met people who absolutely, totally dismissed the idea of there being a superior intelligence. And they're just as miserable too, because we close ourselves off to the mystery. We close ourselves off to the exploration of what it really means to be human, to be the creative, loving, compassionate, intimate, sexual, kind, generous beings that we really are. We close ourselves off to being intuitive. We're told that intuition is somehow new age and you shouldn't touch it. Or we're told that, you know, everybody who can sense things deeply is some sort of charlatan or con artist. Folks, my brothers and sisters, life and being human in this life is on one hand a great mystery, and we have to quit trying to cut that off. On the other hand, it's also a realization of who we truly are, and we can't explore either one of those things until we understand the barriers therein. There you have it. Thank you for your time today. One more session on this topic tomorrow, and then we'll move on. Thanks, guys. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.